from a studio of Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Medicine is a complicated field. Practitioners have to immerse ourselves in science, learn new skills and the use of technologies, all while striving to maintain professionalism and practice within ethical norms. But what happens when professional behavior falls outside of ethical boundaries and laws do not yet exist to punish those that deviate from said norms? Take the case of Dr. Donald Klein from Indiana. A longtime obstetrician-gynecologist, Klein practiced for nearly four decades, helping scores of women achieve pregnancy through the use of assisted reproductive technologies, including artificial insemination and in vitro fertilization. In the 1970s and 80s, Klein knowingly deceived patients desperate to have children, lying to them by telling them he was using donor sperm to inseminate them while actually using his own. His misdeeds only came to light with the advent of modern genetic testing when a generation of young adults around Indianapolis found out they had dozens of siblings that they were previously unaware of. Klein did have to surrender his medical license, but he never served jail time. His story and those of the women he treated and their children is told in a brilliant new podcast called Sick from our colleagues at WFYI in Indianapolis. My guests today are its hosts, Lauren Bavis and Jake Harper, both of whom are health reporters for WFYI and a Midwest reporting collaborative called Side Effects Public Media. In an eight-part series, the last episode of which will be released tomorrow, Bavis and Harper take us through the medical, legal, social, and family drama that Klein's actions have caused in Greater Indy. You can learn all about the podcast on its website, sickpodcast.org. Lauren Bavis and Jake Harper, co-hosts of the Sick Podcast and reporters for WFYI and Side Effects Public Media, are my guests today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Lauren Bavis and Jake Harper, welcome to Medical Monday. Let's start by just having you tell us how you came across the Donald Klein story. Yes,
I first heard about it. I was at the Indy 500, which for folks who are not familiar, it's a big racing event in Indianapolis. I think it's pretty internationally known. But anyway, I was walking around with a friend, and when we ran into one of her friends who happens to be a medical malpractice attorney, and he started talking to me about this case. I can't remember if he, you know, was working on it or if he just sort of knew about it because he was in the field, but he started talking about this case, and I just like could not get it out of my head. And this was a couple years ago at least. And so that was really the first time I heard about it, and it sort of stayed in the back of my mind for a while. I didn't really report on it for my job. It was just something I sort of stayed aware of as the case progressed. But we essentially got a grant to do a podcast late last year. And we were sort of reformulating a podcast that we had previously done and came up with this concept of approaching it in a sort of serialized fashion. And the story of Dr. Donald Klein really sort of stuck out to all of us, I think, as something that we could explore and dive deeper on, because there's just so many uncomfortable questions to sort of unpack and try to answer.
And so, I mean, you kind of answered why you wanted to tell it as a podcast as opposed to like a straight documentary or straight reporting piece. It really does lend itself well to the serial format. I mean, I have really enjoyed listening to it. It's very sort of sadly entertaining just because there's so much information in it. Of course, the name of the program is Sick. So why did you guys call the program Sick? And I recognize that this predates the Donald Klein story.
Yeah, I think Sick gave us the option to work with it in a few different ways. I mean, it's going to be a health podcast that tells a different story every season. So it could talk about illness. It could talk about actual sickness. It could talk about a story that, as we were reporting the Klein story, we talked to people about why we thought that a doctor might use his own sperm to impregnate his patients. We heard the word sick thrown out a lot. I think it gave us some flexibility in terms of what we could cover and what we could dive into.
So just for our listeners, give us the brief overview of the Donald Klein story. Why is this guy getting so much, well, why did he get so much attention in the last few years, at least in Indianapolis? And then I saw a couple of national news stories as well.
Yeah, the easiest way to explain it is just he was a fertility specialist who used his own sperm to impregnate his patients. And most of these inseminations occurred in the 70s and 80s. Or all of these inseminations occurred in the 70s and 80s, and the children are now grown. And they essentially found out about it through consumer DNA testing. They sort of found more siblings than they were expecting, essentially. And the number has since grown to about 60 or more.
So this doctor used his own sperm on, as far as we know, 60 different, to create 60 different children. But a big part of it is, of course, that he lied about it. He told these women that he was using sperm from medical students or medical residents. And at the time that these women were infertile and seeking his care, they were grateful to him for helping them conceive and have babies. But they, the moms and then the children themselves have felt quite differently about it once they found out that Dr. Klein himself was using his own sperm. So what were, when you first reached out to some of the, whether it was the moms or the children, what were the reactions that you were getting?
We found out, we started reporting on this story years after it had broken, really. And so the people that we first talked to had been out in the media already. They had done several appearances either on local television or in some cases sort of lesser known national programs, I think. And so our first interactions with them were really sort of retelling. I mean, the first interview I did was with Matt White, who appears in episode one in that parking lot. That was the first time I had met him. And so, he sort of gave me start to finish right there. And we ended up going back to him to get a little bit more tape. But, the reactions that people have to this story, like as many siblings as there are and as many mothers as there are, there's that many different reactions. I think a lot of the people that we talk to are out in the media and they are angry about this. There are some people who don't want to talk to the media and for very respectable reasons. And we have no idea really what's going through their heads. And so I think it's one of those things where I think a lot of people are angry and then we really don't know what a lot of people's thoughts are.
Well, put another way, are there any of the folks that you've talked to or come across who aren't upset or aren't angry by Dr. Klein's actions?
No, not that we came across. I should say, no one who's directly connected to the story. There are people that you sort of encounter. Actually, I have an uncle who had this reaction. There are people who say, they got a baby. What's the difference if it's his sperm or if it's a medical resident's sperm? I think those reactions kind of discount the experience of the patients and the children themselves. But you do hear that as well. But no one that we've talked to who's connected to this story in a real way has had that kind of reaction of like, oh, this is no big deal.
I think it's been interesting as we've interviewed people to kind of watch them process their feelings. We spoke to in one of the earlier episodes a couple of doctors who were contemporaries of Klein's. And they came learning medicine in a very different time. They talked about how the field of fertility treatment was growing and how ethics don't always come into play until something has been in practice for a little while and people can look at it from multiple sides and say, this is how we should be practicing versus, no, this is a completely unethical way to practice. So it was interesting to see them kind of break down their arguments and come to terms with how someone could have chosen to do this in his own medical practice.
I'm curious, to the extent that you know it, like what kind of response you've had to the podcast, both there in Indianapolis and then, either in regionally or nationally.
Oh, we don't look at those metrics or anything like that constantly. No, just kidding. We do.
I bet not. You just put it out there in the ether
and hope for the best. It's been really exciting to see them, the interest in the show kind of grow on social media. The numbers that we don't ever look at. I know we've had downloads in all 50 states. We've had at least one listener in Nicaragua. So if you're listening, thank you so much. We were featured on 1A, and we were able to go to the local TV station here in Indianapolis that first broke this story to talk to that reporter about how things have changed. And anyone who's looking to find the show can find it on sickpodcast.org.
I think we did kind of come into this thinking that there would be a lot of interest. I mean, that's what we were hoping for anyway. But we knew at a certain point that Fox was creating a TV show that's sort of based around this idea of a fertility doctor using his own semen. There was an Australian show, I think, a few years ago that did the same thing. And there was, a feature film being created around the same time that we were. It was after we started doing this, but we sort of heard about that as well. So this idea of you know, a fertility doctor using his own semen to impregnate his patients has been sort of explored in other media before. And so we were hoping that a podcast would also be something that people were interested in.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guests today are Lauren Bavis and Jake Harper, both health reporters with WFYI Public Radio in Indianapolis. They are the co-hosts of the new podcast from Side Effects Public Media called Sick. And you can, you know, listen to it on any of your streaming devices or go to their website, sickpodcast.org. And Lauren and Jake, I wanted to know, and I may be scooping the final episode, which I think is going to actually drop tomorrow, but what is Dr. Klein up to now? And I guess, did he or will he face charges?
So as far as we know, Dr. Klein is living in Zionsville, Indiana. Up until this year, using your own sperm to impregnate a patient wasn't a specific crime in Indiana. So Klein did face charges, but not for that. It's been interesting because the folks that we talked to who were legal experts for this said that finding a way to bring Klein to justice wasn't easy. And, I mean, this is a crime that's not necessarily a crime. This is something that's still happening all across the country, and new cases are coming to light of doctors using their own sperm. So, yeah, he ended up facing charges, and I don't know if we want to get into them or not, hoping folks will still listen. But, yeah, he was never charged for using his own sperm.
Well, and you, as you pointed out earlier, I mean, the ethics change as the medical technology advances. And so something may be looked at either currently or in hindsight as pretty unethical, but may not be illegal. And that's where a lot of times I think medicine rubs up against the law in strange and difficult ways. I would submit, having listened to this, that he clearly knew what he was doing was wrong. And that's because he changed his behavior once he took on a colleague, this Dr. Culver, who you feature in the podcast. And then the rules changed, which meant all of the sperm samples or the sperm used for these inseminations had to undergo HIV testing. And so once the rules changed and he had some scrutiny, he really changed his behavior quite quickly. But then he kept lying about it. So it's not as if I think as a listener that I could say, oh, he thought what he was doing was right.
Yeah, I think, I mean, just to be clear, we don't know for sure. Yeah, so you're referencing the idea that he sort of stopped in 1987. We're not sure about that. That is sort of the data that we have now is that the last time he did this was in 1987, based on the sort of the youngest Klein sibling that is alive today. I don't think either one of us would be really shocked to find out that he had continued to do this once that doctor was in his practice. If, you know, if another sibling took a DNA test tomorrow and popped up and they were born in, 1988, it wouldn't shock us necessarily. But I think, we were talking about this earlier, and I think the fact that he lied to his patients, I think, has always been unethical. No matter what time period you're talking about, I don't think it's something that has changed. And the fact that he lied shows that what he was doing was that he thought he had something to conceal, essentially. And so, he has tried to justify what he did in various ways, I think. But the fact that he was lying about it shows that he knew other people wouldn't necessarily like it.
Yeah. And then one of the things I learned many things in the podcast, is he was a religious man, often citing Bible verses. What do you think about his purported religiosity, and how does that square with his behavior?
I think a lot of people ask, why do we think Klein did this? And I don't know, as a journalist, if I feel comfortable completely answering that. But we know that there are other doctors who have done this. The other doctor who gets really prominently mentioned is Cecil Jacobson. He was a doctor in Virginia in the early 90s who was caught using his own sperm to impregnate his patients. And he was Mormon, and there were even academic articles written about if his religion had anything to do with this. Yeah, we don't really know. Like you said, he's quoted scripture when he talked to the group of his biological children he met. He quoted scripture in court when he ended up being charged for a crime. But it's kind of hard to say. We do know religion had a major impact on his life, though.
So you guys are investigative journalists, and you tried to talk to Dr. Klein. I think actually went to his house or where he was living. And you were chased away and told by someone who answered the door, or maybe you didn't even get to the door, I can't remember, someone kind of yelled at you and said, it's illegal for you to be here. And subsequently, you found out through some legal counsel that that was actually not the case, that you are allowed to ring someone's doorbell. But tell us what that experience was like.
Yeah, so we drove to Klein's house intending to knock on his door and actually expecting that he would tell us that he wouldn't talk to us. There have been plenty of reporters who have tried to do that in the past, TV and print journalists, and he's usually turned them away and said that they should try to contact his lawyer, and his lawyer also doesn't usually respond to reporter comments. But Jake and Klein had actually exchanged emails a few months earlier, so I wondered if that was a sign that he might be willing, you know, years after his legal case resolved around this, that he might be willing to actually sit down and talk to us. And we had a lot of questions really planned, and so we drove to his house, and we parked at the edge of his very long driveway, intending to walk up to the door. And that's when the woman who you hear in the episode of the podcast also drove into the driveway and told us that we were on private property and that we needed to leave or she would call the police. So, yeah, we called an attorney, and they told us it's not illegal to knock on someone's door. And knowing that, we did. We went back to his house, actually, and knocked again. And, again, no one came to the door. We know that there was a camera over the door, so it's not clear if someone was home and saw us or might have seen us later. But we tried in a lot of ways to reach out to Klein and to some of his family members who were also involved in the story. And it's possible we're still interested in finding out as much as we can about, you know, this man and what he did and why he did it. There's a lot of questions that are unanswered for us and for the siblings.
So in that regard, were you getting formal no comments or we don't want to talk about it, or just they just weren't responding at all?
So I initially emailed him like very early on in the reporting process, and he first said, you know, if I recall correctly, he basically said, you know, I'm old, I don't want to talk about this anymore, please leave me alone. He responded in a way that allowed me to respond again via email anyway. And eventually he did sort of say, you know, talk to my attorney. He's the one who basically controls whether I talk to the media or not. And then we reached out to his attorney who never once responded to anything. We reached out several times to his attorney over several months. And we continued to reach back out to him. Eventually, we actually dropped a letter in his mailbox, too, just to explain who we were and what we were doing. But yeah, no, it wasn't quite a no comment, but it was a non-response, I would say.
Okay. Well, you're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. And my guests today are Jake Harper and Lauren Bavis. They are the co-hosts of a new season and a podcast from Side Effects Public Media called Sick, which has the tagline, they want to teach us about what goes wrong in the places meant to keep us healthy. And it's an 8-episode season. Each podcast is roughly 20 to 30 minutes. And Jake and Lauren, one of the side benefits of telling this kind of icky story is you take us through the history of the assisted reproductive technology field. I was going to say industry, but, you know, there's a scientific aspect to it, but it is indeed an industry. And you really kind of cover all the bases, all the way back from sort of the dark early days, even in a little bit in the 19th century, where it didn't work, but it was off to the races, all the way up into the 21st century, where we have lots of technology that helps us. It seems like you guys learned quite a bit about assisted reproductive technologies.
We learned way more than I ever anticipated. Yeah, so I mean, people have been trying to make babies without sex for a long, long time. And it's interesting because it kind of, some things have changed, but some things really haven't. You know, this is a field of medicine that particularly impacts women. And for a long time, you know, when doctors couldn't tell what was the factor in infertility, if it had to do with the women's eggs or uterus, or if it had to do with the husband's sperm. And I mean, this is way back when, you know, fertility was only thought between, you know, a man and a woman. Now sperm banks and fertility clinics are actively, you know, courting same-sex couples who used to be turned away. It's a field that women are in a really vulnerable spot when they're trying to start their families. And I think that it's something that, you know, I took away from it as a woman is just how important it is for doctors to be communicative. And I think that that's something that, you know, between some of the times you were mentioning and the Klein story didn't really change. One of the first successful artificial inseminations on record, the doctor did it to the woman while she was asleep for another procedure and didn't tell her or her husband. And then you scooch all the way up to the Klein story when women didn't have the opportunity to pick who their sperm donor was going to be. That was completely in the doctor's hands. And when it was in the doctor's hands, the doctor made a decision that years later the woman would completely disagree with. And, you know, many women who we spoke to said that they felt like they had been raped. So a lot has changed. But at the same time, I think that this is a field that still has huge room to grow. I mean, we looked up, it seems about 1 in 8 couples struggles with fertility. And I think as folks maybe wait longer to start their families, it's a field of medicine that's going to continue to grow, which is why it was one that we really wanted to investigate.
Right. And it's so interesting that some states, infertility treatment is covered as a benefit for insured couples, but in many states it is not, and it's quite expensive.
Yeah, I think so. The main episode where we go into this, we spoke with a woman named Heather who happens to be Klein's biological daughter, undergoing fertility treatment here in Indianapolis. And she actually had insurance when we first started talking to her. She had insurance that covered her fertility treatment, but the amount of money that she was spending out of pocket, even with that insurance, was crazy. I mean, she was spending thousands of dollars between facility fees, her deductible, and medications, and I think there was a deposit that she had to put down. And then if you need like a sperm or egg donation, if it's male factor infertility and you need a sperm donor, that can be hundreds or thousands of dollars. An egg donor can cost thousands and thousands of dollars, I think. And so I think all told, she ended up spending about $60,000. And she had insurance for part of that, too.
Yeah, it's just those out-of-pocket costs are really exorbitant in all facets of healthcare. Well, you guys alluded to this earlier, that Dr. Klein is indeed not the only physician to use his own sperm to impregnate women who are patients and be deceitful about it. I think you reported that is what is known in the literature, that 2% of infertility doctors have used their own sperm, which that's the reported figure. So you estimate it might actually be higher. What is going on? I mean, not that we can answer this, but what do you think is going on? Is it just the convenience factor alone of just having, you know, there may not be the right sperm on hand, so just produce some right there at the moment?
Ooh, that is a tough question to answer. I mean, it's the same question with Klein as with any doctor. It's sort of, I don't think we really know the reasons why. Even if we did talk to someone who, you know, was willing to share why they did it, could you really take that at face value? I think it's hard. So that study that you're referencing was a report that was put together in the 80s for Congress. And they just happened to ask, you know, as a survey of fertility doctors, I believe mostly in California. And they just happened to ask, you know, where do you get your sperm from? And they listed, you know, they sort of gave options. One was medical residents and one was self. And 2% said that they used their own sperm in their practice, which is 1 in 50, which is, I mean, it's a surprisingly high number. And like you said, that's the people who said yes on a survey. You know, if I were a doctor doing that and I, you know, if I was one of these doctors not telling my patients where the sperm was coming from, would I say yes? I don't know. So, yeah, it could be an underreported figure, too. And I think we're seeing cases pop up all over the place all of the time. Like as we were writing this, I think we had 2 new cases pop up from when we started writing episode 1 and by the time we finished episode 8, at least 2.
Wow. Well, I'm curious too about the community of people, of children or offspring, if we want to call it that, people that Dr. Klein fathered unknowingly in the case of the women, the patients that he treated. And then so there are these many children who have these half-siblings. And I think you said the number is now up over 60. Clearly, some have chosen to remain private, but many have not and gone public. I guess it started with a Facebook group or something like that. But what kind of community do these folks share, if any?
Yeah, so the kind of nomenclature they go by is the siblings. And like you said, there's more than 60 of them. They've kind of created this community. They'll see when direct-to-consumer DNA tests go on sale, they recognize that, you know, within a couple of weeks, they might start to see new names pop up of people who could be related to them. And a lot of them have taken on sort of these like sibling ambassador roles almost, where it's they, you know, find the name of the person, they find, you know, Facebook, or if there's an email address listed, they reach out to them and say, I think that you might have a lot of questions about this. I've been embroiled in this for years. And I mean, in future episodes of the podcast, or maybe it's only one at this point when this is airing, but you're going to hear from people who've been involved both for years since before 2016, when the story kind of first broke, and people who've only kind of just found out about this. And like you said, it's understandable that for a lot of people, you know, they're in their 30s or 40s by this point. They have a very established view of who they are as a person and who their parents are, and maybe where they think their physical traits came from or their personality. And all of a sudden that has completely been upended. And so, yeah, it's a really private, vulnerable moment that, like Jake said, now is a TV show on Fox that's kind of played for comedic effect. But at the same time, a lot of them are able to kind of joke about the situation, and they get together and have meetups and kind of interact in the same way that, you know, you or I might with our siblings.
Yeah, and I think we should say, too, that some of the people that find out about this don't want to be involved at all. So the ways that they communicate, they don't want to stay in touch with anyone who's in this group of siblings. So there's, you know, we know of some, the ones that we know of are sort of well-connected in this group. There are others who find this out and say, you know what, I don't want to know anything more. I'm just going to stay out of it. And that's, you know, understandable in some ways too, I think. But yeah, the reactions vary.
Yeah. Wow. It's just so interesting. And of course, yeah, I mean, I suppose it makes sense that we all respond to news in certain ways or trauma in certain ways. And so it makes sense that some people would gather in community and others would say, you know what, I'll do this on my own or think about it this way. Jake, Lauren, I have one final question, which is that you guys work for the public radio station there in Indianapolis, WFYI, which is great call letters. But you're also part of a group called Side Effects Public Media, which for which you also work and put on the show. And I would love it if you could explain to our listeners what Side Effects Public Media is. I've been a subscriber for a while, and the content that Side Effects puts out is really great.
Yeah, so Side Effects is a public radio reporting collaborative between several public radio stations in six Midwest states. So we are in Indiana and Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, Kentucky, and Ohio. And our whole goal is to tell public health stories that affect real people. I think a lot of people consider the Midwest to be flyover territory, but in the states that I just mentioned, they're really a kind of a battleground for huge healthcare issues, everything from major disease outbreaks, like an HIV outbreak we had here in Indiana a few years ago, to Medicaid expansion, to legalizing medical cannabis. These are stories that we're telling in the Midwest, but are being carried at public radio stations all across the country. And yeah, in the future, hopefully Side Effects can continue to tell really innovative stories like we were able to in the first season of Sick.
Any other podcasts in the works from Side Effects or from WFYI?
No, I think our main focus is to figure out what we're doing for season two of Sick, of this podcast. Nothing has been floated in our direction anyway about a different podcast, but we've got our hands full with this one.
And we'll have a new season and a new story sometime next year.
Excellent. Well, before this year ends, I just want to congratulate you both. My guests today are Lauren Bavis and Jake Harper, who are award-winning journalists, investigative health reporters with WFYI Public Radio in Indianapolis, also part of the Side Effects Public Media Collaborative. And they are the co-hosts of a great medically fascinating, sociologically fascinating podcast called Sick that looks at what goes wrong in the places meant to keep us healthy. Lauren and Jake, thank you so much for joining us. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.